This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to The Science Bug. I'm Simon Connolly.
And I'm Morgan Marion.
This week, Morgan is continuing her interview with the brilliant Greer Sanger about our native Red Admiral butterflies, or kahukula. We'll be hearing about how to track, or not to track, butterflies, and the most impressive egg-laying butterfly I've ever heard of.
We've got so many different things we want to look at. One of the main ones is, what do they actually do at night? Like, where do they go? And especially in winter, because the adults and the larvae can both overwinter.
Mm-hmm.
And as adults, like, no one knows where they go. Like, no one's going to find them anywhere. So it's like, just suddenly on sunny days in winter, they'll come out.
They're quite a beautiful creature in that their inside wings are like, you know, the top of the wings, they're quite bright red and black, very striking. And then when they fold their wings, the underside is visible, and that's camouflage, right?
Yeah, it's like all mottled, like brown. Yeah.
It's just so cool.
Yeah, it is.
they've got the best of both worlds, you know?
Yeah.
They've really figured it out.
Yeah. It's really cool. So yeah, I would love to find out. They do. At night and in winter.
How would you do that? Would you put a tracker on one, or would you just follow one?
But you can't really track them. I've looked at like the options for that, and
too heavy for them?
Yeah, I think so. Like anything that would be able to track the long distances, it wouldn't really work. And that's the thing. We don't know how big the range is that they fly, but from what I've seen, I think it's pretty large.
Mm.
So like you definitely can't follow them. Like they fly really fast and very far away really quickly.
We'll just see you running on the side of a highway. What's Greer doing? Yeah, she's just following a butterfly.
It would be more like following it in a car. Like they go really, really quick. Chasing them around trying to catch them was like you ended up working out certain ways of like doing it.
Mm.
Usually if they're flying, there's not even really much point in trying.
Just because they're quite like
they're very good,
flighty, and they zigzag almost. Yeah. Right,
best time to get them is like if they're like sitting on something or like a plant or on the ground, like basking, like they come from above because they fly directly up, so they don't like.
I've caught one by hand.
Oh yeah, and you can do that.
It was on the branch, and I just like quickly just grabbed it, closed its wings, and he was fine.
Yeah,
he was fine.
You can't tell.
Oh, you can't tell the difference.
Yeah, so that was the other struggle of my study. So I was catching.
Of course, you're trying to mate them.
Yeah, and I was trying to put them in these ones. So I was only really wanting the females, but of course I couldn't tell. So I just had to catch as many as I could and hope that I caught some females. So I caught 47 in total, I think, which was actually, I think, quite impressive. Because
I think it's quite impressive. Yeah.
In general, really catch them and all that, and then 10 of them laid eggs in our experiment. So I probably did catch around 50, which means that that's not too bad then if you think about it. Like half of the females-ish decided to lay eggs.
What about the yellow admiral? Does that also use nettle to lay their eggs on?
Yeah, so I think they're probably quite closely related. They also use the nettles. We don't know which ones they prefer. That would be cool to look at, but we didn't really was able to do that at the same time.
There's still so much. I'm truly astounded by how much research there still needs to be done about these quite striking insects. You know, they're not really hidden or, you know, they're quite in your face.
And most people, even if they don't like insects, do tend to like butterflies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is interesting. And with the kahukula fly, so they're native, but they're not endemic.
Right.
So they kind of came over from Australia, I think. And sometimes there's still some that come over, like sort of winds and stuff.
They get blown over, yeah. Right?
So, yeah, that's kind of interesting because, like, I don't, as far as I can tell, that definitely doesn't happen. The coconut is only found here, as far as everyone knows. No research has been done on it, as far as I'm aware, but from what I've seen in the field, there tends to be lots of kahu kōwhai going and laying the eggs on the introduced dwarf fishel. So, yeah, that's probably more likely to be the more native plant, I guess, probably in Australia and that kind of thing.
So should join up with Australian kahu kōwhai.
Yeah, and also it'd be interesting to see if it's different, like, the public will buy over there. Yeah, if there's been any, like,
divergence from the time. Yeah.
So native ones. Because we have also seen public will buy lay eggs on the olive as well. So it would be really interesting to see, like, which one they actually develop best on.
And whether there's any competition between.
Yeah. Potentially. I definitely see more kahu kura around olive, not that many kahu kōwhai. And in areas where there's a lot of Urukuyura instead, it tends to be quite a lot of kōwhai, at least from what I've seen, but yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I also wanted to ask, so these kahu kura, they get protection for their babies out of this plant, right?
Yeah.
What does a nettle get out of it? They're being eaten, right? Would they not want to?
I don't know if they get anything out of it, to be honest. I feel like they've probably evolved to some degree with the chemicals, probably to, like, try and stop the predation. And then the butterflies in turn have, like, adapted to that, and it's just, like, more toxic, I guess.
Are they the only insect that eats or uses nettle?
So other insects like spiders and that kind of stuff will kind of hang out in them, and that kind of thing. And also sometimes predate the butterflies if they're like flying to weird for that kind of thing. But generally, I think they're more catching other bugs. But yeah, no, I don't know if there's really that many other species that use them, at least not that I noticed. There's these little bugs, I can't think of what they're called, but they're made little, like, bubble things around them. Fiddle bugs.
That's what they are. I love them.
Yes, there's
the fiddle bugs will go on the nettle.
Yeah, it's only seen it in a couple locations.
Because to make their spit-like kind of covering, they use the sap from the plant and they take it to their body and then they eject it out.
I've seen that.
That's fine. Interesting.
Not very many.
For them to be able to do that with, you know, quite a toxic plant. Wow. Yeah.
So I think that's really the only one I've seen, like, using the plant. There's also, like, this, it's like a fungus type thing, I think, that also can affect the ulama. So in certain places, there's a lot of that, and that's really damaging the ulama, which isn't great.
We need to hook you up with a plant biologist on the nettle.
Yeah.
They can get you all the nettle. When you had all the nettle in your greenhouse, did you have to put, like, danger signs all over the place? Like, do not get over here.
But yeah, I did have one of, like, don't touch it. And, like, every time I went into water, the nettles, I had to wear, like, a canvas, like, rain jacket and, like, a cap and sunglasses and, like, gloves. And
that would have been a hell of a look.
It was great, yeah. So, yeah, I had to do that all the time to try.
Would have been awful in summer, though. It'd be so hot.
Yeah, it was a bit hot. With the raincoat, a lot of the time it was fine. So it was already when I had to, like, get it. And the rest of the time it was just, like, gloves, just to try and stop some of the sins.
Yeah.
But you also don't want to use, like, the thick gloves because you don't have much dexterity.
Yeah.
And you don't want to use the ones that also, like, make your hands all, like, gross and sweaty and warm. They're, like, completely plastic. So it's, like, sometimes we would just use the ones that are plastic on the bottom side, and then on the top side, like, just, like, fabric. That would mean every now and again, you'd mess up and you'd get a sting on the back.
Did you have helpers with you?
Yeah, some people weren't so keen, just because of the sting, you know, on that. Mm. But they also kind of thought it was cool because, like, this dangerous plant that you get to work with. So It's cool. And then the butterflies are pretty, and we also got to go to lots of really cool locations.
Did you ever have escapees for the butterflies?
No, not for the butterflies, but we did for the larvae. Mm. So at the start, I just had like insect netting kind of on top of these ice cream containers. That's what it kept the larvae in. And then I think with, just like the early instars are so small that some of them would be a little escapees. And I was like, oh, so I had to like go to like spotlight all the time and get chiffon and like use that as the lens. And at one point I had like around like 80 caterpillars. And I had to weigh the food for each and every one of them because I had to get the same weight of food. So it was tedious sometimes. I ended up becoming like super attached to the larvae as well because I was like weighing them, like seeing their progress. And,
I gave mine names. Did you give your names?
I had too many to do that. I had way too many to give them names.
Because I was weighing them individually, so I had to give them names.
Yeah. Well, they had numbers, so like that was their name. Not creative enough to come up with like 90 names. That was cool. I do kind of miss that field work. That part, I'm excited to get back to.
The adults obviously need food, right? They need nectar from flowers and things like that.
Yeah.
Is there any particular plants that they go for, or do they just go for any flowers, or?
Yeah, so I did like a iNaturalist study before starting my summer stuff, it's like a progress report
thing. Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wanted to see like where I was going to be able to find them, so that kind of stuff. So I looked at the plants that they were found on and tried to see if there was like connections and connections and stuff. Yeah.
I love that.
and there was. Nettles was up there, as some of them, but it wasn't at all the highest. The highest one I think was Hebe. It's like 50 plus of the sightings.
Cool.
Was on Hebe, so they love Hebe. some of the other ones is like cabbage trees.
Because that could be another way that we could help out the population is also just providing native flowering plants.
There's also some introduced ones that I like as well, so like buddleia and the like ivy plants.
Mm-hmm.
Those ones were also strong up there. Oh, I just thought of what just come back to me. Overposition drumming behavior.
Oh, that's what it's called, with the front legs. They just...
Yeah, it's kind of like they both at one time just like shoot out.
Have you filmed this behavior, or is this?
No, I tried to. Like in my overposition cages, it's like white, like insect-ish on the outside, and trying to like get the camera focused and like through it, it was like impossible. So I could see it quite well, but I couldn't get it.
Is this a common behavior of butterflies, or? I've never really heard about this behavior.
Or I think one of the nymphalids, I would assume so. I think all the ones that have like the vestigial legs that are like bristly, I would assume that all of them would do the behavior.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what the legs have become useful for.
So cool.
So
when you saw that behavior for the first time, were you like, what the hell is going on here?
So I was like trying to find out what it was because I had no idea what it was. And I felt like a new thing. Yeah, I was like so excited. And I was like, oh, damn it. Someone else has already found out about this. Okay. But there wasn't much on it. Like, it was really hard to find. And I think there was someone that had like pictures of it. And it was with, probably like Miracle or something. I can't quite remember. But yeah, it was really cool.
You need a film it.
Drumming behavior.
Yeah. That's a paper right there on Red Admiral drumming behavior. I mean.
So, but like how many drums?
Yeah. Is there a difference between different nettles that they drum on? Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between females and males?
Well, the males, I assume, wouldn't do it.
Yeah, that's true.
But the females, they'd probably use their legs.
Or something there, else,
I would assume.
Yeah, or maybe they just don't have way less hairs on their vestigial legs if they're not using it for that.
I would assume that it's still need to find places of nettle to try and find females,
because
I imagine that would be one of the places where they likely find each other. So
just waiting on the nettle. Yeah.
But whether they would, I feel like they probably do the drumming bait, but I don't know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it's really cool because, like, the first one I caught in the field, which is what was amazing, because I was expecting to have to wait, like, weeks and weeks to mm-hmm. find the calicutta, let alone catch it, let alone have one actually lay an egg. And the first one I caught happened on, like, the first day in the field, and it was amazing. And it laid, like, 80-something eggs, and I was like,
you're a winner!
This is awesome. It turned out to just be, like, really good first day luck, because, of course, I only caught, like, 47 for the rest of the many weeks that we went out there.
And none of the other ones laid 80 eggs?
A few laid, like, in the 30s.
80 seems like a lot.
I think more naturally they spread them out, only lay, like, a couple in, like, each place. Mm-hmm. I guess this one was maybe a bit more desperate, or maybe she was a bit stressed, or maybe it was like, oh,
maybe she was a bit old and so bold, yeah.
Finally found it. It's like, oh my ex.
That's true, yeah.
Don't really know why, but it was really cool. But she did the drawing behavior. Having it all within like 1 hour.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was quite amazing. We thought it would take a while for that, like, become like acclimatized to cage and then decide to do anything. But yeah, and she did the drawing behavior on each of the middle plants. And she did it on all of them. Then she stopped doing it to the introduced one. Just did it between the other two for a little bit. And then she just went to the one and made on that one. So, like, it was very much like she tested all three of them, decided that was the one. And she made all of them on that one small little cutting of Oonga. Instead of, like, spreading it out, she just picked that one.
Yeah, I can imagine your excitement at seeing that being like,
that was amazing. I was like, this is so cool. We just see one other book. at one of the sites, there wasn't any nettles present there, but there's a lot of butterflies that would go there, both kahu kura and kahu kōwhai. And it was kind of like being a butterfly house. Like, there was quite a lot of them. So mm-hmm. there were like 10 flying around you at once. And what they were attracted to was these like eucalyptus trees, and they had like these little holes in them that was like leaking sap. So they would go and drink the sap. And I have some really cool videos of this. And the wasps would also be there
mm-hmm.
to try and get the sap. And I think there might be something really cool thing going on there, because from what we could see, there seems to be like these little borer bugs. They're like making these little drilling holes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it seems like maybe the wasps are going in and like pulling out the bugs, like from there. Because the one's just like hanging on the outside, at least from like what we could tell. And then they're like chewing at the thing, making it a bit bigger, and then like getting that sap. And then the butterflies and the flies and these other things all like benefiting from it, like trying to get the sap. So there's like all these like fights going on. And yet, so like, the wasps would like, the flies come by, they'd grab them, drop them to the ground, and like kill them to try and get the sap. It was like intense, so we were like, oh my god, I hope this is gonna happen to the butterflies.
What?
But the butterflies, I think because they're quite big, well, they're not very big because of their wings, the wasps kind of, they annoy them and buzz them and kind of like threaten them, but they don't really go for like the attack. And the butterflies just kind of do the same thing.
Like, which is surprising because I've seen like, vascular like attack my stick insects and they're like, you know, huge. Yeah,
I feel like it probably does happen, but when there's like quite a few wasps, I would imagine, and they would maybe take it on, but usually there's only like one or two at like the different holes, like getting the sap. So I feel like the amount of wasps would probably make a difference, and that would probably mean they would then choose to attack, but they kind of know there's no point when it's so big if it's only one or two. But yeah, so like the butterflies would also like fight and annoy each other to like try and get the sap and stuff. It was really cool. So like videos of like 10 butterflies and like several wasps and flies, and they're all just like fighting. So I really want to do something with that behavior in the future as well. I don't really know what.
Absolutely, I can do, yeah. I wonder what they get out of the sap, whether it's just, you know,
yeah. I just have a theory. Maybe. It's might be completely wrong. But there's like this behavior that some butterfly species do. It's called like puddling. So
is this when they drink like the tears of other animals? Like, you know, when they need the salt?
So it's like that, but puddling is, I think, more specific to like muddy puddles on the ground.
Uh-huh.
Maybe there's water and that kind of thing. And like they'll pull around and like they'll drink it up and they'll get the salts and, yeah, some kind of idea of what they're getting from it. So, yeah, they get, like, minerals and all that kind of stuff. And there's been some studies on other species where sometimes it's both sexes, males and females, that do it. And in some species, it's just the males that do it. And there's been some studies that have looked at, like, why. And they think, from, like, what they can tell, is, like, sometimes it's, like, a nuptial gift.
Mm.
And then sometimes...
That's going to be a whole other episode.
Fecundity as well. So it's, like, I really want to know whether that happens as well with the kahokura. Because I've seen behavior that I think is puddling. Like, I've seen it in, like, photos. It's a bit hard to tell because you can't see the behavior. But, like, they're on the ground and they're, like, drinking on the ground. So, like, it's probably puddling behavior, right? So I think that might be happening. And then one of my things is, like, at the site where they're feeding from the sap from eucalyptus trees, we were, like, capturing them and putting them in these position cages, and none of them ever chose to lay eggs. Like, they weren't interested in the nettles at all. And we were just like, why? And we've been, like, a few times, and we caught quite a few of them. We're like, this is really weird. Like, why isn't this, why aren't they choosing it? Like, there's no nettle around here, so, so there's, like, a few things that obviously could be happening. One, they can't lay eggs because they've already laid all the eggs, or they haven't mated, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or that they just don't want to in a cage, which is also fair enough. So there's those kind of things. But that applies to, like, every location.
Mm-hmm.
Because this location, it's, like, we caught quite a few and none of them chose to. So it was kind of odd. So I think that potentially there might be something else going on, like, maybe because the site doesn't have nettle, it's not actually females that are looking to lay eggs that are coming to this place. Like, maybe it's more males,
right,
or something like that.
Right.
Or maybe it's still male and females, but they're coming specifically for, like, what they're getting the nutrients from the sap.
You're going to have to do another experiment on choosiness of sap.
Yeah, maybe. Is it males?
Yeah.
Females? Yeah. I've seen the, like, Tarsi. A way to Adam, he also was at the entomology conference.
Yes, yes, yeah.
So I sent them away to him because he's doing genetic stuff to do with the difference between the mainland kahokura and the Chatham Island one.
Right, yeah.
If they're different enough to be subspecies or completely different species and all that kind of stuff. So I sent all the Tarsi away to him, like, 47 legs. I hope it's an odd thing to do.
What'd you do today? Just set the white butterfly legs?
Yeah, it's great.
Across the country?
They went on a plane. So I sent those away to see if, like, find out, hopefully, like, what sex they were. And then maybe I'll be able to see if there is something there with my theory about the eucalyptus thing. Like, maybe it is all males. And maybe it's to do with, like, the puddling and nutrients.
That's going to be so cool. I'm excited for you. Oh, yeah. My gosh. Just to kind of finish up, I guess, but what would kind of be your message to people about how can we help this butterfly? What should I do in the next few months to help it? Should I go out and buy onga onga and try and plant it in a corner of my garden that I can maybe fence away?
It's kind of a bit of a cupcake message because on one hand, yes, that is what we want to tell people to do. But there's still some things that are a little bit unknown. So one of the things that I'm thinking of maybe looking at is whether the, like, parasitoid wasps, if their predation, I feel like it's the right word, but their effect on them, would it be greater if the onga-onga plants are planted in areas that are around more, like, introduced plants, so, like, introduced gardens.
Like in urban places type. Yeah.
So that's kind of one of the things that I feel like we still need to look at. So then...
Because if we were to plant onga onga in an urban environment, are you kind of thinking, oh, well, we're almost offering these kahokura up on a plate to these parasitoid wasps?
Possibly. Potentially.
Right.
We don't know, but that's, like, kind of the thing of... It's like, that's maybe a thing that could happen. And so it's like we want to encourage people to plant on the honour to help the populations, because there's lots of areas, specifically in urban and farming landscapes, where there's not really on the honour. So that means that the kapapura are coming across the introduced ones more frequently and more often, and that's been shown in overseas studies of different butterflies to change what they decide to lay their eggs on. So it changes their, it's like the threshold, right? So like where they get to a point where then they kind of just decide to lay on this needle, even though it's some part.
Yeah, yeah.
So it alters the threshold level of what they accept and what they don't accept. So they become like less choosy kind of thing. So there's a fear that that's happening. So even though my research kind of shows that if they have the options, introduced nettle isn't acting as an ecological trap because they don't prefer it. They prefer the ones that are better for their larvae. It's still potentially happening in the wild just because they're not getting the option of
no choice.
So on one hand, we want to be like, yes, plant lots of omelette everywhere, but we just need to find out with a little bit more on, because potentially in some areas it might not be the best idea. But it's probably not going to cause like a lot of harm, because really the more nettle there is, the more option there is for them, the more cross plants, the more they can spread out, which probably I feel like would maybe reduce the amount of pastoral loss potentially as well. So it's like if you go
away,
like we certainly know.
More research.
Yeah.
We'll be waiting on you, Greer.
And we wish Greer the best of luck, wherever her research or her butterflies take her. In our next episode, we are keeping with the stinging theme and finding out how bees are impacted by climate change. You've been listening to The Science Bug with Simon Connolly and Morgan Marion. You can find us at ScienceBugPod on Instagram and Twitter. This podcast is made possible by Free FM, and you can find our previous episodes on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting app. Catch you next time.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.